are, whenever you are, however you happen to be listening, we are so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC,
your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Linda, Squarespace, and 5-4 Club. They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my friend Christian Spicer. And the two of us, this episode, have to start a little sad. And that is because Christian and I lost a friend this week. Perhaps you heard about it. The entire gaming community lost a friend this week. And I couldn't do any of the show without acknowledging that right at the top. Our friend Andrew Yoon, who was a colleague on the Weekend Confirmed podcast, and we did that. He worked for Shaq News, which hosted that show. He did an episode of this show, DLC, and he was a friend and a really talented, fun, great guy. And I know, Christian, you share my condolences for his family and just a real love for that guy. Always a positive attitude. He had such a vibrant personality. He was a good guy. He was generous with his time for us. He was insightful when it came to video games. And he lived a really wonderful life. He had just a couple of years ago, as he mentioned when he was a guest on DLC a couple of months back, he had just quit his job in games journalism and ventured out into game design and had designed his first board game called Divorce the Card Game, which by all accounts is a really fun game. I still haven't had a chance to play it, but I hope to. Anyway, Christian, I know you share my sorrow in this moment, and we couldn't start the show the normal, exuberant way. We had to acknowledge the sad passing of Andrew Yoon.
Yeah, go back and read stuff he wrote at Joystick or listen to Weekend Confirmed episodes if you want to get a sense. He loved everything and was just the nicest of people and always on point fashion-wise and just a ray of sunshine. I was a jerk on Weekend Confirmed, right? I was a Debbie Downer, and I always loved doing shows with him because it was such a fun cat and mouse we would play, where I would try my darndest to bring him down, and we would bond over our love of F-Zero GX, and it sucks. There's not a better way to put it, and it's a horrible part of life, and the only upside of it, I think, is that the only reason it hurts is because you had such a wonderful time knowing them. If you didn't, it would just be like, whatever, who cares? It'd be, you know, an aunt or something inconsequential. But the good times were great, and that's what makes the sadder times sadder. And there's a GoFundMe for his family and for memorial funds you can find. And it's the best thing to do is acknowledge how wonderful of a person he was and, you know, move on from there the best everyone can.
Yeah. You mentioned his great fashion sense. That's something that I'll never forget. I always called him the best dressed man in gaming. He was into anime in a huge way. He was into cosplay in a huge way. Always had awesome cosplays going back 10 years or more. And just a fantastic guy, a guy who will be missed. And our heart goes out to his family, and I really appreciate, especially on our subreddit at DLC, there was a lot of outpouring of support and fond remembrances of Andrew. So anyway, we will still do a regular episode. I just needed to acknowledge that right here at the top, and maybe we can do a quick moment of silence for Andrew Yoon. Sadly, at the young age of 29, he's gone. So just a moment of silence here. Okay, so we'll get back on the horse and do an episode of DLC. We're talking video games, we're talking fun stuff. And DLC, of course, is always your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week we have an awesome guest, and we actually got a suggestion for what DLC should stand for from Twitter. At Psydox on Twitter said that DLC should stand for David Loves Cheapness this week, because we've got Cheapy D himself, the creator of Cheap Ass Gamer. David Abrams. Hey, Cheapy, how's it going, man?
It's going well. That was a tough intro right there to come in on. But thank you for having me on, and thank you.
Well, I can say this. I know it's always difficult. I can say one thing. Cookie Cruncher is still a horrible game. I can lighten the mood
Cookie
with
clicker,
that.
I think.
Cook whatever it is. It's garbage. And I can also say, Cheapy, your show, the CAGcast, is the very first video game podcast I ever listened to. I mean, you are, like it or not, you are the elder statesman, one of the elder statesmen of video game podcasting. Like, one up yours and the CAG. What are you on? Episode 400? 350?
Almost. We're almost at 400.
In
just a couple away.
Incredible. Thank you for doing this young neophyte one-year-old show.
It's a baby show for babies.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here, and we are going to start the show as we always do with Story of the Week. I just didn't want that to be a Story of the Week, even though a lot of people submitted it as such. It feels like it cheapens his memory to have it sort of just be a story. It was so much more than that because he was a friend. So, but we will start the show, as we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the part of the show where we make our case for what the most important stories that happened in the world of gaming were this week. Cheapy, as our guest, you get first pick. Of course, people can always submit their stories to us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC or by using our hashtag on Twitter. That's DLCSOTW. So, Cheapy, what is your pick for Story of the Week?
Let's go with the joystick one. Joystick shutting down. I mean, that's a huge story. And I mean, I hate to go from sadness to sadness, but
yeah.
But joystick's been around since 2004, and I had gotten to know those guys from the very beginning. They were always like the classier outlet, right? I mean, they never seemed to get sucked down in like clickbaiting and misleading headlines and all that stuff that the other sites seem to get mixed up in. But here they are; they're being shut down for sure.
Yeah, a strange situation this week where Joystick actually reported on their own demise. They were sort of the first place to break the news, which is oddly meta and strange. But yeah, Joystick was always my go-to video game news site, and I'm particularly stung by this. Zav Damatos was just on our show, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he had no idea that this was in the offing, and it's not just Joystick, it's also Massively.com, which was another go-to site for me for MMO-related news. All these AOL properties are being shuttered. They are firing a whole bunch of people who are really talented, who really brought a great voice to gaming. And as you said, this was a great place to go that didn't have snark. It didn't have that kind of weird, messy format that I think has become all too prevalent now, where you can't really tell what's an article and what's an ad. You aren't just getting video game news. You're also getting new movie news and sort of pan geek entertainment all jumbled together. I would love for any listeners that have a great replacement for Joystick in mind, another site that they go to that functions the same way. I'm afraid there isn't one, but I'd love people to tweet at me, at Jeff Cannata, if you have a replacement for Joystick. Because I go to Polygon, I go to Kotaku, I go to Rock, Paper, Shotgun, I go to a lot of places. There isn't anything that is as clear and as focused as Joystick was for me. It's a bummer.
Yeah, that's literally the only video game website, video game, you know, dedicated website that I would go to every day, oftentimes multiple times a day. And when I heard they were closing, I mean, I thought Joystick wasn't going to close, and then I clicked this link and my life was changed forever, I think was the article. No. It's sad. You do have to wonder, though, what is the sadder thing, Joystick closing or the fact that perhaps because they never did any of that clickbaity type stuff, or misdirect with ads and this, that, and the other. Is that part of why they're closing? Or is part of why they're closing because they were owned by AOL and what the what? That's still a company? Like, how is Joystick closing but AOL isn't?
Yeah. Well, Brian Crescente over on Polygon now, he's the founder of Kotaku back in the day. He wrote an interesting op-ed piece about how it's really the end of a certain type of video game blog service that, you know, kind of came into power in like 2004 and really had 5 years there where that was how people got their video game news. And it just isn't that way anymore. And it's sad to me as someone who valued that kind of easily accessible news and news that's uncluttered. I find myself mourning that thing. I don't enjoy getting, pursuing news stories in ways that are more personality driven and more video and all that stuff. As somebody who has created video and creates audio about news stories, I still prefer getting raw news and having a place that I can get raw news that is attempting to be, sans personality and sort of coming at it with a bit of integrity. I'd love to find a place that can do that and that still does that. And that isn't to take away from a lot of these other great sites, because I find value in Polygon and on all those others that I named. None of them do exactly what Joystick did, and it's a loss for the community, in my opinion.
What are your go-tos, Cheapy? I mean, I listen to enough CAGcast to know that you're not the biggest gaff reader. Or I think you said you'll read, the first post and then kind of skip through the rest.
I don't really read it too often unless somebody links me to something specifically.
So do you have a news dive-in where you go, or just kind of Twitter? Is that kind of where you get most of your stuff now for gaming?
I use Feedly, the RSS reader. Mm-hmm. And I just have a bunch of sites plugged in there. I know it's not very romantic or anything like that, but but that's what I do, and that's how I
want romance in my video game news. That's what I need, is a little romance.
Right. Well, you know what I mean. Sometimes I don't even know where the headline is coming from, and I don't know necessarily that I care so much. If I'm just reading it in a quick RSS format, I may not really care.
Business idea, it's fabio.feedly.com, and you get your links with a little bit of romance.
Right. There you go. Ozzy in the chat here, our friend Ozzy from Shack News, said the Joystick is what made him want to get into that line of work, which is interesting. And another interesting from the chat, I lost it, ETH Demon says that Twitter replaced Joystick. Do you guys think that people are just sort of getting their news from Twitter now and don't care about a link being posted? As long as the headline is there on Twitter, you don't need to click a link. You just understand what is going on. I mean, have we reached that level of shallowness?
I think people are clicking the link. I think they may just not care where the link is going to. The friend posts a link from somewhere and, they're using Twitter as I'm using an RSS reader, basically. And they don't really care necessarily where it's coming from. And it happens to be that Twitter is a pretty good news delivery platform. I know, like Cheap Ass Gamer, we use it to deliver, deal news, and it works great for that. I mean, all you need is a sentence and a link, basically, and Twitter delivers that.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's a sad story to start off with. Christian, do you have something maybe a little happier?
Let's keep the march going.
No.
Well, it's give and take. So Club Nintendo is closing, and they say they're going to relaunch a new Nintendo loyalty reward. And I think Club Nintendo is the thing that was awesome in Japan. And when we found out it was going to come to the U.S., we were like, finally, we're going to get some cool Nintendo trinkets. Because Club Nintendo was kind of where you got official and weird Nintendo swag before Amiibos took that crown. But now Nintendo has said Club Nintendo is closing. But just today, they announced the final hurrah of all the stuff that is available for you to spend your fake digital points on. And they have some actual physical merchandise. I think the best is the Majora's Mask. They have a Majora's Mask tote or messenger bag, which I think I read the description right and I looked at pictures. I think this is right. I think it's a black canvas bag with black graphic on it. It's kind of weird.
Black on black.
Urban.
Yeah.
It's like that urban camo. I don't know. But before, Club Nintendo used to release like one or two 3DS games or, eShop games you could get for a few points. There are a ton of games available. If you still have Club Nintendo points, this is the good news. This is the silver lining. Holy crap. And from eShop to Virtual Console to full retail, I know Wonderful 101 is available. for 600 points on the Wii U. On the 3DS, 3D Land, Mario 3D Land is available. Donkey Kong Country Returns is available for 600 coins. Like, if you have coins sitting around, this is awesome. The sad news is, I don't get, I guess the question is to Cheapy, you and Jeff, like, what? Why are you closing and you're going to reopen another? Is this just a rebrand? Is this just a news story to get Nintendo in the news in January or February, wherever we are now? Like, I don't quite understand the, we're closing it, but we're going to bring something else back. I don't understand.
Well, they've done this before. It's a cyclical thing. They closed whatever, I can't remember what the thing was before Club Nintendo, but it was a Nintendo Power something or other. But, and then they made Club Nintendo. So it's like, it's just this cycle of, well, that's, we're exhausting that and we're stopping that because we can't keep on doing this forever and we're going to start something new. I think it's a smaller deal than maybe we're making it out to be, you know? I don't know. Cheapy, what do you think?
It could just be more a push to more digital prizes instead of little tchotchkes.
Right.
Keep hanging out with Mario on them. But because usually they don't have that many games for available, right? But now I know now they do as part of this going away thing. So maybe it's more pushed towards that.
I think it's like anything. I bet you would find that even in the retail space, or even in the I guess this is the retail space, but even in the like fast food industry, you know, I bet companies retire their, you know, 15th sandwich is free thing periodically just to make it so that somebody doesn't walk in with a card 20 years old and say, where's my sandwich? They just, I think that's just what they do, but I'm not an expert in that area. I just kind of sense that from the fact that my sandwich cards tend to expire.
Those are always similar, like where products like Doritos, or I don't know, pick a snack where they'll have something on the box, like new look, same great taste, or even better, like, same look, but better taste, which is kind of like, did you like the old Cheerios, idiot? Now they're good. Well, I guess it is just marketing, but.
Were any of you guys in Club Nintendo? Because I wasn't. I tend to not even participate in these things, even though I probably could have gotten a lot of points with the amount of games that I acquire. But I don't even, it doesn't really affect me.
No. Oh, I'm in it. And I'm looking at some of these games. I don't understand. Cheapy, I don't understand how you're not in this when, I mean, I know Shipwreck got you into the Best Buy Rewards. Like, I feel like this is up your alley, and you were in Japan where you got cool stuff.
Well, so people used to send me their, people who would import games from Japan to America would send me their Japanese Club Nintendo points because they couldn't use them. But I think I got one prize and lost interest. I don't know.
Man, you're killing me.
I don't need it. I don't like to have a lot of junk.
Tote bags. Just put all your junk in the tote bag, and then you could tote your junk from place to place.
Tote bag is kind of high on my junk scale. You know, backpack, tote bag.
Yeah, you know,
cheap sunglasses. Actually, I like cheap sunglasses. I take that back.
Yeah, you should. This is all cheap ass stuff. This is like right up your alley. It's like as cheap as it can be.
I like to keep my life simple. Try to get. I threw out a lot of stuff when I moved. I'm trying to keep it, you know, junk free.
All right. Well, I will take
you
up
have
the
good news.
Yes, I will take up the responsibility of lightening the story of the week segment, because I think this is a feel good story and is awesome, especially if you watch the video of this guy's Twitch stream. We have, ladies and gentlemen, the first ever Grandmaster of Tetris outside of Japan. He's an American kid. His name is Kevin Burrell, and he is amazing. We all know, having listened to DLC this last year, we all know that Tetris is the greatest game of all time. It's not even an argument. Tetris rises above all games and becomes the greatest game of all time. And this guy, there are only 5 grandmasters of Tetris on the planet, and he became the 6th and the first person to do it outside of Japan. And you can watch him do it. The entire, like, 2-hour process is on Twitch. He recorded the entire thing. I would recommend watching at least the last, not the last, but like the right before he does it, there's like a chunk of like 5 minutes there where he's not sure he did it or not. By the way, the process of becoming a Tetris Grandmaster is redonkulous. He's playing
Tetris. It's not just putting it on your resume, because I did that 5 years ago.
Really? How many jobs did that get you?
This one.
Yeah. That, wait a minute. So he's playing Tetris the Grandmaster 3 Terror Instinct, which I've never even heard of. But so you need to get a Master M ranking 4 times in your most recent 7 games, which means blasting through 999 pieces, meeting a certain grading and timing requirement, and then completing the credit sequence of the game, which is when all the pieces become invisible, so you don't even know what you're putting them on. And it's blindingly fast. This guy is like a robot. Interestingly, he's playing with like an arcade stick, which I thought was an interesting point of note. But I highly recommend people watching this. First of all, it's an amazing feat to see how fast his brain processes the pieces. And secondly, his genuine reaction to achieving the grade when he's sort of sitting there wondering if he did it or not, and the game goes doot, 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 ba-gong. He's like, oh, I did it. It's so great. So anyway, this is definitely a feel-good story. Cheapy, are you what would you say your ranking at Tetris is?
It's pretty horrible. I've never been good at that game. I've always liked it. I like the music, especially. I even made a remix. I took a DJ Assault song and I remixed it with a theme from Tetris. It's called Ass in Tetris. So you can look that up on YouTube if you want. But I was a fan of the game, but was never any good at it. But I don't know. You can't use a joystick with it and be a grandmaster, can you?
In the chat room, Chris Wellman one's telling us that it's because the game he's playing is the arcade version from Japan. Yeah, I guess that's the only way to play it. But it's a sight to behold to watch him play. I mean, the pieces are out and on the, you know, and dropped to the bottom before I've even registered what the piece is. He's working at a level that is redonkulous. And it's a really cool video, too, because he's there with his friend, like his buddy is hanging out with him in the same room. And when it happens, his buddy, like, doesn't even get it. He's like, wait, is that it? And he's like, yeah, man, that's it. I did it. He's like bouncing off the wall, so excited. And his friend's like, but okay, what did I just witness here? Explain it to me. It's great. It's really, really
good. Watched some guy play Tetris for 5 hours. His brain is mush.
Yeah, exactly true.
We have some great stuff in the chat. Ozzy said, we've got people playing Street Fighter on a pad and Tetris on an arcade stick.
That's right. Yeah, that guy who won the Street Fighter tournament won it on a PlayStation 1 pad.
And then Kent Doggy Dog, he's so good at Tetris, even when he poops, it forms straight lines.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
So you don't need to, neither of you need to have your answer now, because I'm springing this on you. This wasn't pre-planned, but this gets me thinking, what would you guys consider is the game that you are best at, or the game that you were best at? Your skills can be rusty, but you know, back in the day, what did you crush at, or what can you still do the best in? Right. We can think about it.
That's easy for me. Because I'm not too good at anything. So it's a very short list. NHL series, the EA NHL series. I've always played that since it came out. So especially, you know, the old ones, especially, because I probably put more hours.
Like
into
the
those.
Game in the movie Swingers.
Exactly. Yeah. So all of those. And in college, like that's all we did was like make tournaments of that. And you know, it's very nerdy. So that one, and also Super Bomberman.
A high skill game for sure.
It's another game that you can just keep in your college dorm room, and people will just be coming in and out of your room all day to get in on the action. So probably those two only. And now I'm sure I'm horrible.
I used to have some mad skills at Street Fighter 2 back in the day. I mean, I couldn't rock any tournaments even then. Although I did enter a few tournaments and I did okay, but they were like local, you know, local arcade things where it's like, you know, there was like 2 kids in town that were any good, me being one of them. I felt like I could hold my own in Street Fighter 2 before people were counting frames of animation.
And right. It was better then. You didn't have to worry about all that nonsense.
Yeah. You know, I think min-maxers ruin everything, really, to be honest. But, I could be sort of competent at games. And then it's like, oh, no, there's the kid who, you know, spent an hour analyzing video or whatever. And now I think I'm actually getting pretty good at Heroes of the Storm. I think I can roll pretty large on that game.
I was hoping you'd say that. Oh, man. I cannot wait for it to go full access and you realize you're horrible.
Oh, I get my butt kicked. I certainly get my butt kicked, you know. But, you know, it's a team game, so I always blame it on my teammates. No, I think I'm pretty decent. In fact, I was going to – I want to throw out this, and I may regret it, but I definitely would love – if there's people listening to the show that are good – I want to play with people better than me. And I have a bunch of guys that I play with that are good. I really want to join like a serious ranked team and see how well I can do and like learn. And if there's anybody out there that has a good team that's already level 30, because I just hit level 30, which is when you can get into the ranked play of Heroes of the Storm. I would love to join your group. So contact me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata. I may regret this, but I think that could be really cool.
Basically, what you're asking is, are you a gamer that isn't also having a career in Hollywood? And are you actually good at games? And not just kind of good? And good at talking about them?
Yeah. I think I'm decent. I think I'm decent. But I could probably end up realizing that that's not true.
My game, which isn't at... I've gotten handed my butt handed to me by some people that, and I realize what really good is, but NFL Blitz and then NFL Blitz 2000 every year, having the Super Bowl being yesterday, if you're listening to this live or on Monday when it comes out, every year, sans the last 4 years, but every year until then, after it came out, I would host an NFL Blitz 2000 tournament before the Super Bowl started at my place, and we'd have a Super Bowl party, and I was really good at NFL Blitz 2000 back in the day. On the Dreamcast is how I played it. What a game.
Also a skill on your resume, but very strangely, this job is the only one that you can
for. Respects that.
Yeah. speaking of getting good at stuff, guys, I have to thank our first sponsor, which is Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the place to go to learn how to get good at stuff. Since it's already February, you may... not have started your 2015 learning things, but now's a great time to start. Invest in yourself this year. Start learning something new at lynda.com. We'll give you a free 10-day trial. It's lynda.com. The place used by millions of people all around the world has over 3,000 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, and business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, and Photoshop. And all of their courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. This isn't like some shoddy YouTube type lesson where you're not sure who the guy is and the video isn't very well done. No. This is all super high quality. Whether you want to start new financial goals, find work-life balance, invest in a new hobby, or ask your boss for a raise, Lynda.com has something for everyone. And because you listen to this show, we're going to hook you up with a 10-day free trial by visiting Lynda.com. That's LYNDA.com/DLC. It's very important that you do that. You'll get you your 10-day free trial. And we got, if you're into video game design or you're curious about video game design, why not use that 10-day free trial to learn about Unity? They have Unity 3D training on the site. They have this cool course that's called Foundations of Programming for Kids. So maybe if you're a parent or you're a young person that, you know, just kind of wants to understand what programming is about, it's awesome. It's really, really cool. They also have another course called Code Clinic, which is this series where every month Lynda.com issues a code challenge, and then the authors share their solutions using a variety of different programming languages. It's really, really cool. It's interactive. It's awesome. Lynda.com/DLC. Remember, it's LYNDA. They have sponsored our show. They're hooking you up with a free 10-day trial, and it's an awesome way to learn. Just give it a shot. Lynda.com/DLC for your 10-day free trial. All right, guys. You mentioned football video games. How crazy is it that Madden 15 nailed the final score in their prediction simulation of the Super Bowl? Are you guys blown away by this, or do you think it's a fluke coincidence? Cheapy, what do you think?
I think they threw the pass there at the end just to get the score to match. It's all a big conspiracy.
It's all rigged. It's EA rigging the game.
Stake. I mean, this is great publicity for the Madden series. No, it's pretty crazy. I don't know what it means. How many? I'm sure that they're How often have they been right before throughout Madden's history?
I don't believe they've ever been. I don't think they've ever been exact on the final score, but they've predicted the winner fairly often, which is, you know, a credit to them. They even predicted in this one that the Patriots would be down 14-24, and then would come back to win 28-24. I mean, that's pretty crazy. What do you think, Christian?
I just think that there's a guy named Biff with the sports almanac from 2015 that's finally coming home to roost.
He got a job at EA, which is what any time traveler would do.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
Did you guys see this Unreal 4 virtual Paris apartment demo? Evidently, the 3D artist Benoit Devereaux, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, he's an artist that worked on Dishonored, posted a recreation of this Paris apartment done completely in Unreal Engine 4. And it's basically looks like somebody walked in with a video camera and recorded a beautiful, gorgeous, high-end apartment. It's got a lot of people excited for what Unreal can be. Of course, it's non-interactive as far as, you know, none of the objects actually work and none of them are 3D. I mean, the 3D modeled, but they don't have any physics. You can't move them around. It's very static. But holy moly, does it look cool. Did you guys see this? Chibi, did you check it out?
I haven't checked it out. I can envision the Assassin's Creed game wrapped around it that doesn't work in like 3 years. But I don't know. I'll check it out later, but I hate to say this, but I have to go and pick up my son from school now.
We're sad to lose you, but we appreciate you hanging out as long as you did, and we'll hope to have you back sometime soon.
Yeah, when my son graduates from school, and then
there you go.
Be perfect. But thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on for a bit, Chibi.
Later.
So that story was submitted by DatSim1015 on Twitter, and we appreciate that. It's pretty remarkable. I love the idea of an Assassin's Creed that takes place in one apartment room. one small apartment in Paris. So yeah, who's he gonna assassinate now? It's the male guy. Anyway, go ahead.
Because he just left, he didn't have time. It's at CheapED on Twitter, and his website is Cheapass Gamer, and they do a podcast as well. My question for you, Jeff, on this demo though, is WTF Unreal 4? Is it real? Like, I feel like every other Unreal, the game comes out, Gears or whatever it is. I mean, where's Fortnite? Are all these rumors of Epic not really doing anything? I feel like the longer we
wait, they had nothing to do with this. This is just some guy doing it.
Oh, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, will Unreal 4? And people listening, I have seen your feedback where you hate my industry speculation questions, but guess what? I like them. I mean, is Unreal 4 going to be Unreal 3? Can anything be Unreal 3? That engine was everywhere. And Unreal 4, we're seeing some cool things, and they're trying to give it away for free, and this apartment looks cool. But, okay, neat. I mean, what does this mean for you or for gaming? I don't know. I saw it, and I was like, that looks neat. And it's like, oh, it's not interactive at all. I guess it was built in Unreal 4. But you know what I did? I took a picture on my iPhone of an apartment, and it looks real, and I can't interact with those objects either.
Well, I mean, I don't think that this was attempting to do anything other than create a beautiful space that looked very realistic. And I think it shows that it's a very powerful engine. And, you know, I feel like I can't give you a specific one, but I feel
give me a very specific one.
Well, I feel like there has been these things in previous engine generations where we see this demo and it's like, oh, well, who cares? But then, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, games look like what that engine showed. And I think that it really is a preview of the kinds of things we're going to get. Graphics are just going to keep getting better. And clearly this engine can handle that level of fidelity. So why not get excited that games are going to look this good? I think it's cool.
Because the only engine I get excited about is the engine that drives the hype train.
Choo-choo!
I mean, yes, I think you're saying a Jeff Cannata positive outlook of the same thing that I'm saying, where it's, yeah, okay, great. Graphics get better. Cool. Neat. It's going to happen. Let's keep marching towards it. But what I guess the other side of it that I don't know if you really did address is, is unreal being this powerhouse of an engine and Epic actually doing anything with it or other companies doing anything with it. I see Unreal 4 kind of becoming id Tech and Doom engines, where it's a super powerful engine that gets built and then kind of nothing happens because who cares? And then that company's not even really using it. And then all of a sudden it's just like, do you know what was a really great game last year? Brothers.
And but that's, I think that's patently false. I think you're going to see so many games using Unreal 4. I think it's going to be one of the most used engines of this generation. I think that that's already bearing fruit. We're seeing so many games being announced with Unreal as their engine. No?
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope they end up looking like this apartment. So far, I think, you know, we've talked about it. The Order looks beautiful, but people say the gameplay is kind of meh. And then I think Uncharted looks great. Halo 5 looks fantastic. So there are games that are looking fantastic. Drive Club looked fantastic. But not to tease what I've been playing, but I went back to play an old GameCube game this past week. And again, art design and art direction can go a long way to cover up for crappy graphics. I don't know if I need an apartment to look like a real apartment in France. If I can have, I mean, Sunset Overdrive looked great, right? I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, speaking of hype train, I know you're a Lego game guy. Are you excited about the new Lego games that just got announced? Avengers and Jurassic World?
Jurassic World interests me. Avengers, I don't quite understand how that isn't a more limited Marvel superheroes. I mean, I know it will be big. I think they're just putting a popular title on a Lego game, like the Lego DC games are called Lego Batman, and it's not, I mean, it is, but it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We already did a Marvel superheroes. Crap, what can we call this one? Avengers? But these games are great. I feel like skip them for a couple of years and then dive back in at a property you like. They're consistently fun, and they consistently keep getting, you know, a little bit better each time. And if you haven't played one since Lego Batman 1 or whatever, and you love these properties, I can't imagine you won't have tons of fun with these games. And the good news is they go on sale pretty quickly after they come out, because so many come out. I mean, Star Wars, the complete trilogy, is still a great game that you can find very cheaply if you're looking for something to play. You kept trying to get you into Marvel Heroes. You even borrowed it. And
I played
what about
a little
the
of
Lego
it.
Games? Yeah, what don't I thought you'd be more into them. It's collecting, unlocking, nerdy isms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so why and not yeah?
I feel they're pretty simplistic, and they don't I love the Lego aesthetic, but I feel like I wish they were all in the Lego aesthetic the way the Lego movie is in the Lego aesthetic. I feel like you've got some Lego bits stuck in a video game world rather than the entire video game world created out of Lego, which would get me much more excited to be in that world. And I think generally speaking, it just feels a little simplistic, and I don't get the joy out of the Lego world by running up pushing X to construct something. The puzzles are a little fun, the combat's a little fun, everything's a little fun. It's just not, I you know, maybe if I had kids to play with. A lot of people talk about how great games they are to play co-op with your kids. You know, if that was my world, maybe I would enjoy them more. I think the answer to your question about why is it Lego Avengers and not just Marvel superheroes, I think this probably more closely ties to the films and the film narratives. I mean, clearly Jurassic World, they say, is going to have all four of the Jurassic movie plots in the game. So
wait, the movies have different plots other than dinosaurs show up and F things up?
Well, that's the plot, but maybe I'll just say exact dialogue moments.
As long as one of them has the uneven or the even parallel bars. Is that Jurassic Park 3 where they...
I think so. I try to block that out. But yes, that would be amazing in Lego. You don't think there's any fatigue of these Lego? You think they can just keep finding new IP to stick the Lego license onto and it'll still all be good?
I mean, I think there's individual fatigue for sure. I can't say that someone isn't justifiably sick of them, but I also think the same way the argument some people make for Nintendo, there are new gamers coming in. This is someone's first Mario Kart. This is someone's first Nintendo game. To some extent, I think Lego does that better than anyone else, because if Mario 3D World was really your first Mario game, that game can get difficult at times, much more so than I feel like Super Mario Brothers was, and the Lego games aren't that. And they have co-op in it. They're brands that stay relevant and that are new and exciting things. So as a kid turns 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever the age when they dive into these games, they're going to be something for them to be excited about. Imagine if we had Transformers the movie Lego game when we were kids. That'd be awesome. Actually, I want that now. That sounds like a really good game.
Except for the Transformers the movie part. Other than that, it sounds great.
No. Not Transformers. I'm talking about Transformers cartoon. The movie. Yeah.
Gotcha. Lawman in the chat says that sometimes he, a reasonably intelligent adult, would sit there with his kids and scratch his head. I don't know what we're supposed to do next, kids. Sorry, game over. So he finds that even the Lego games can be a little, challenging.
Well, that's a discussion of game design where I feel like Assassin's Creed runs into that. I run into that problem with Assassin's Creed, where so much of the game is telegraphed and you're told exactly what to do and go here, and you have the yellow line, or GTA, and you have the mini map telling you where to go, what to do. That then all of a sudden, if the game stops doing that, it's far more difficult than a game like Portal, where you know you're figuring things out along the way. And I agree. Was that Lawman that said that in the chat? I agree. The Lego games suffer from that, as do many other games, where the most basic things, they hold your hand through. And then there's something that's different, and for no explained reason, you're left with no indicator or no, world indication or no map, or how do you, squirt or slide under a bridge, or how do you squirt water out to mark something? And it's just like, what happened here? Why did you not show us how to do that? And that is so, in my opinion, one of the most frustrating things about games, where they just all of a sudden abandon tips when they've been tipping you the whole time.
Yeah, always tip your gamer. Always tip your gamer. What about this interesting story sent in sort of at the last minute by our friend Ozzy at Shaq News? Evidently, Sony Online Entertainment has been sold. What? It's no longer a Sony joint. So it was sold to investment firm Columbus Nova, and it's now going to be known as Daybreak. Sony Online Entertainment is the division of Sony responsible for EverQuest, DCUO, PlanetSide. They are the MMO division. It's no longer a Sony. Oh, this is kind of crazy. Is it? This is just happening. Evidently, just news just broke right before we went to air. So I'm not really sure what the ramifications are, but I guess it could mean that we might have multi-platform MMOs from this company rather than just Sony PC / PlayStation versions of these MMOs. Is that cool? What do you think?
I think that has to be cool if more people are able to play them. And yeah, we're still digesting this. What I think is interesting as well is EverQuest Next. Was that what it was called or is going to be called?
Yeah.
I forget its actual name, but that got a lot of people hyped up. I mean, we were talking about that back on Week and Confirmed, and they were giving players a lot of tools, and it was a graphics overhaul, and it looked like a really cool reimagining, or they were really trying to rethink what an MMO could be or should be. And I wonder how much this will change that development or what that game may or may not be.
Pretty wild. We'll have to see how this pans out. But I'm interested to see what happens. It feels like Sony has been kind of distancing themselves from SOE and making it more of an autonomous unit up to this point anyway. So it's interesting that they broke it off. We had no indication that they were even on the sale block, but it happened. This is an interesting article I wanted to bring up with you, Christian. I was hoping to bring it up with Cheapy. The chat room said that he's so cheap that he only will spend half of an episode with us. But we'll get him back for a full episode at some point. He's a dad, and he's got responsibilities. So there's this op-ed piece on Polygon that I find very interesting because it speaks to really my generation of gaming. I think it was Ben Kuchera who wrote it. Yeah, looks like him. And it's all about sort of the death of LAN parties. When I was, growing up as a gamer, LAN parties were where it was at. Doom LAN parties, even, playing Warcraft 2 and StarCraft, the first StarCraft and the LAN party was so much fun. Counter-Strike, Halo, even when the first Xbox came out, people lugging their big old heavy Xboxes to one person's house, setting up multiple TVs, having a LAN party. And it sounds like the gaming industry has pretty much left LAN parties in the dust because it's so easy to do internet-based multiplayer that nobody needs to sort of sit in the same room. And it's Ben's perspective that we've lost something there, that the idea of sitting in the same room and playing these games with your friends is better or at least different and special, and that it's a sad thing that we've lost that element. What is your take? Did you ever participate in LAN parties?
Yeah, I did a lot of LAN from PC games, mostly Doom and then Halo, lots of Halo, carrying TVs and huge original Xboxes. And I don't disagree with his piece, but I'm also the same age bracket. And this is, you know, this will be in 10 years' time a Sandlot game, but it's a Sandlot movie, I'm sorry. But instead of the game the kids play in Sandlot, they're waxing nostalgic about a Halo LAN party. I don't necessarily disagree that gaming is different because of whatever, but I don't think LAN partying ever would have existed if the companies were able to do internet online play, because it's the type of thing where the game hasn't changed. Let me start again. The opportunity to play like that hasn't gone away. But because we are provided with a more convenient way in which to play, we choose not to all get together in the same room. You could bring your TV over to my house, Jeff, and I have fast enough internet that we just wouldn't need to run a cable from one room to another. We would both be on my internet playing on our separate consoles, on our separate TVs. So in some ways, and we'd be connecting via the internet instead of a LAN connection. It's just made it more convenient. But we don't do that because we can just play online with each other and talk over a headset as we did, this past week. So the opportunity to get people together in one room still exists. It's just we choose not to do it. So,
well,
I mean,
Ben,
I don't think it's
farther,
the games.
He goes farther and says that really games switching over to this sort of progression-based multiplayer where nobody is starting from the same point when they start the game. You're starting from however far you've accumulated your progression, so that it really, even if we wanted to, you know, bring our consoles into the same physical space, we wouldn't have the same experience as a LAN party because it's not pure skill-based. It's skill plus gear plus progression plus perks plus all that stuff that's been lumped onto these games, which he points out, and I agree, is a great part of gaming. It's not bad in and of itself to have progression. It's a fun carrot on a stick. It just means that the entire industry has sort of de-incentivized that type of play. Not only that, but you can't really even the pure functionality of LANs isn't built into games anymore. What's your take on the progression argument?
It's what we wanted. It's Call of Duty 4 was a monster, and everybody jumped on that bandwagon. And then Halo 3 multiplayer was still very much skill-based, or whatever the last Halo along those veins was. And it wasn't as popular on the Xbox Live activity chart or whatever it's called. But I think we're seeing the pendulum shift or swing back to that. And maybe it is just nostalgic gamers, but Cliff Bleszinski talking about his next game, it looks like it's going to be an arena-based shooter. Come on, Brain. Why are you going blank right now? Twisted Metal Jaffe. He created a Twisted Metal again for the PlayStation 3 that was very much original Twisted Metal. And it didn't sell gangbusters. I think it made a profit, but wasn't a huge hit by any stretch of the imagination. And then there are still games, Street Fighter you're not unlocking new gis for Ryu. Is he in a gi? I think it's a gi. Or headbands or, boots for Chun-Li or whatever. And so those games are still out there. And there are still big get-together tournaments out there, like Quake Fest and Evo, that are fighting games and different games. I think they're still there. I feel like what Ben was going through is just missing college, which I get it.
That's a fair point.
I miss Smash and Blitz 2000 in my college dorm all the time, but I also think it was great that you and I sat down. You and I, I'm assuming we both did it this way. I could be mistaken, but you and I never left our house. We purchased one of the biggest games to come out this past week, Dying Light. We got it onto our consoles and we sat and played it, and we could have done all of that naked. That's cool.
Yeah, we certainly could have. But neither of us did. We could have, though.
Right. Yeah, I mean, hypothetically. So I get it. And I do feel that same way I bought Smash for Wii U, mostly because I was having my brothers over and Philippe Boucher was over for Thanksgiving, and we played couch co-op. And Nintendo just added, I think, 15 new stages for 8-player Smash. Talk about I know it's not LAN, but couch co-op, or couch, I guess it's not co-op, is it? Couch competitive. So they're still out there. We miss them, but we don't play them and support them and do them.
Let me give you my take on this, because I think there's a little more to it than that. I mean, I think you're fundamentally right that it's sort of like, oh, when I was a kid, we used to get together. And it's like, well, people are still getting together. But I do think there's more to it than that. I think that this feeds into the idea that gaming is – you're playing with this sort of nameless, faceless void of competitive fodder. And I think that does contribute to the general lack of civility that you see online, rather than the idea that we're getting together like we would at a flag football game in the park, or a pickup basketball game on the blacktop, or a LAN party where we're all sort of getting together in one location. We all know each other beforehand, and we're having this fun. Maybe there's smack talk, maybe there's high competitive juices flowing, but it's good natured. That we've moved beyond that to where you're just throwing yourself into this sea of anonymity and pure competition, that the people themselves are fading away and it's just your opponent that I want to get my kill against. And I think there's something to that, in the sense that gaming has become so full of animosity and strife and smack talk and just negativity. Am I banging the wrong drum here?
So I totally agree, and in part, and I want to stand on that mountain with you, like that Coca-Cola commercial. If only I could spill Coke on a server rack and make people happy. I couldn't. I would just get fired. That poor, in real life, that guy just gets fired. He wakes up from that daydream and comes home and tells his spouse that he no longer has a job. But I don't think what you're saying, the problem isn't caused by the games not being there to do the thing. It's how we're choosing to engage in them. Well, dialing all the way back, I've seen a lot of fights, like actual fights, like dudes. I saw one dude, I shouldn't say dudes, I saw a dude lose teeth at a pickup basketball game on a blacktop. You know, these were real life people looking each other in the face. They got together, two teams started playing, they picked teams, and stuff got nasty. People are jerks, and people get competitive, and people say mean things. There is no smack talk, in my opinion, like the smack talk on a blacktop, for that rhymed, at a pickup basketball game. Two, yeah, playing with anonymous people with no stakes or whatever, or no way for you to hurt them or know where they live or hold them accountable for the things they say adds an extra level of meanness to it. But play with people you know. It's an old saying, and it still doesn't change. And the beauty is, the Jeff Cannata way to look at it is, hey, isn't this great? Gaming now allows you to play with almost anyone, anywhere. And if you don't have any immediate friends that are available, you can jump online and find a game with someone, and then fingers crossed, hopefully it's a good game. And if you don't want to do that, you can still schedule play with your friends, but now you don't need to go over to their house. You can play at your own house on your own big TV. And so I think, you know, blaming it on technology and gaming changing is the wrong focus for it. I think it's only gotten easier and better. It maybe is just shining a light on us that human beings are awful. But I don't think it's gaming or technology's fault for people not playing games that way.
Fair enough. It is time now to thank our second sponsor, which is Squarespace. Hopefully you've heard me talk about Squarespace before, because I love Squarespace. Squarespace is your all-in-one website, blog, online store creation platform. It is the easiest way to create the website that you need, when you need it, where you need it, make it look great. And you don't have to be a programmer. You don't have to know HTML. It's great. Simple, it's powerful, and you make beautiful, interesting, unique websites. They have so many templates for you to use, but your website never ends up looking like a template, because you've got, as everyone on Twitter and on our Reddit has said that I say, drag and drop, which is when your dragon helps you drop things. No, drag and drop. It's easy. It's what you see is what you get. WYSIWYG type design. You just drag that picture over to your site, plop it in. It's easy. And at only $8 a month, You get a free domain name if you buy Squarespace for the year. They have 24/7 support, so even if you run into a problem, they'll help you out. I've used it myself. My website, jeffcanada.com, is housed on Squarespace, has been for years and years. I'm so happy with their service. They make it so easy. They have a responsive design. Your website scales to any device. You don't have to worry about what device people are visiting your site on. They've got this new feature called Cover Pages, which makes it easy to create a one-stop, beautiful, just splash page for more simple projects that you might need. And they have commerce. Every single website comes with a free online store. If you need to sell anything, boom, you got all the tools you need. Drag your dragon to drop your dragon drop. Here's the thing. You don't even have to use a credit card. You don't even have to input any way for them to charge you money to try Squarespace, which is what makes it so cool. With no credit card required, you can start using their site, build your website, see how the tools work, see if you like it. And then when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, you use our promo code, which is JeffSentMe, J-E-F-F-S-E-N-T-M-E with no spaces. You go to that squarespace.com/DLC, build your website, use that promo code JeffSentMe. We'll give you 10% off your first purchase. You show support for DLC. You make it possible for us to make this show. And you have your cool looking website. Zip, zip, no problem. Easy peasy. So thanks to Squarespace. Squarespace.com/DLC. JeffSentMe is the promo code you want. All right, let's head over to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Playlist is where we talk about the things that have been on our playlist. And our playlist synced up, as you referenced earlier, Christian, because you and I have both been playing Dying Light. In fact, we played a little co-op action together. What's your take on Dying Light?
I really, really want to like it. And I told you this while we were playing. I think, and I didn't know this before. It was only, so backing all the way up, Dying Light, very much Dead Island meets Mirror's Edge. I think that's a very safe way to describe the game. The lines aren't as punishing as in Mirror's Edge. If you miss a line, the level's over. You have to restart to get a jump kind of thing. But they really wanted to make parkouring and running and navigating the rooftops of this world an important part of the game, from what I've played of it. And then, while the combat isn't like Dead Island 1, where you can do analog combat, it otherwise feels very similar, where you can focus on different body parts, and it's a lot of bludgeoning before you start getting some weapons, and ammo is limited, and weapons break and degrade, much like they did in Dead Island. It has more polish than any Dead Island game I played. It seems like it's, you know, they spent more time, or maybe had a more budget behind it. And I love Techland, the developer behind this game. I mean, well, I love some of what they do. There's good Techland and bad Techland. Call of War as Gunslinger is still one of my favorite experiences from 2 years ago now, 2013, I think it was, last gen. Mm-hmm. So Dying Light, I didn't know this until I played it, but I think the zombie run around kill thing game that I'm looking for is something in between Dead Rising 3 and Dying Light. I want a hybrid of the two, or something between Sunset Overdrive and Dead Island 3. I love the idea of cool movement and taking dudes out, but I don't like the idea of my pipe breaking and
love needing taking to spend dudes out.
Yeah,
to dinner
and zombie dudes to night. I don't know. I don't know what you call it. They're already dead. To the final destination, 5 3D. I don't like that aspect of it, and I also think it's interesting where the running and the parkour is also, it's weird. It's realistic, but not at times, and it's that weird mix that I can't quite get my hand around to make it as fun as it should be. I mean, Jeff, what about you? Does any of that make sense, or am I?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. You're on a dead island, and the light is dying. I you know, we talked about this a lot when we were playing it together. I think 90% of the issues that I have with this game would be fixed if I could just pop into third person mode. I think I would be having so much more fun playing this game in third person. I respect the idea of creating a dynamic, interesting, compelling narrative in first person, which they really did a good job of here. In Dying Light, you know, it reminds me almost of the Metro games. in how well the universe is conveyed, how well the story is conveyed. There's a lot of establishing the universe when you first start this game, and a lot of really creating this foreboding sense of what it might be like to live on this crazy place with these zombies that are taking over, and how you have to find shelter and you have to get above them to survive. All that stuff is conveyed so well, and I like storytelling in first person. I find myself very much immersed in that world, you know, in a Half-Life or there's a lot of games that use first person well to convey story and to put you in that place. And this game does that too. Metro is another one. But when you start flippity dipping around the universe and leaping up to ledges and grabbing onto things and trying to make your line and figure out where you're going, and you're also being pursued by fast zombies and slow zombies and trying to have your bearings and do all that quickly, it becomes so disorienting to me to run, 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 leap, have my face smashed up against the side of a building. Did I catch that ledge? Oh, okay, I did catch that ledge. Now I'm climbing up. Now my face is looking at my shoes. Now it's looking up at the sky. Oh, there's crap. There's still a zombie up here. That all creates a sense of tension, but it's not a sense of tension I enjoy. It's a sense of tension based on feeling out of control and disoriented, which I understand maybe even have been a goal of the design. It just not... I just want to have a – just let me look at this situation from a broader perspective and know exactly where my guy is in relation to all these other things. Adding to that, the fact that you are this superhuman in a lot of ways, able to run large distances, leap over buildings and climb up, scamper up things like a high-end, resilient human. But you're not superhuman. You if you fall off stuff, you break your legs. I broke my legs in this game a lot. I'm a leg-breaking MF-er. It's a leg-breaking game for me. It's a leg-breaking simulation. And I just that's not fun. Like, let me fall off stuff and be okay. And I get it. The whole point of this game is to be fragile, be human, to be in peril against the superhuman enemy. But it's more fun if I can just jump off this cool building and land and do a tuck roll and keep going like I can in a lot of other games.
Well, I feel like it's a disconnect, though, and I'm not trying to put your square peg into my round hole, that I meant what I said when I said that. But I feel like it is the disconnect between the things, because sometimes, like, if I jumped off my roof, I would break my legs, if not worse. But at the same time, I also can't climb up a telephone pole, a sheer telephone pole, in 2 seconds, whereas your character in Dying Light can. And so when you climb up this telephone pole, you expect other awesome abilities that you then don't have.
I agree with you, but in their defense, like, there is a person that can do that, right? There isn't a person that could fall 2 stories and not break their leg. So I get where they're trying to position the game. Like, you are the best of humans, but I'm also in a video game where I'm trying to leap onto this ledge. It's not super clear to me if I'm going to land there or not. There's no great indicator as to whether or not I'm going to make this jump. And when I'm just trying to scamper around your world or reach a switch that I need to flip at the top of something, and I make a leap that I think I'm going to make, and then I don't, and I break both my legs, it's just not fun. And the fact that they have late in the game a grappling hook that, like, simplifies all this and changes the game 100% from what it was at the beginning. Like, give me that earlier. I don't.
And a totally unrealistic grappling hook. So we should also mention we played with Anthony Taormina, who's been on this show, friend of the show, writes over at Game Rant. And I think he put up his review over there. So if you want to read someone that's completed the game, he can give better insight in terms of end game stuff. But yeah, the grappling hook zipline thing, it's not a realistic zipline. Like, we were playing the second map or second environment of the game later after you had to leave, Jeff, and, you know, he launches this thing across buildings and then goes straight as an arrow over there. It's not like Indiana Jones swinging. It's, here's 100 meters, I'm going to go in a straight line, slam into this other building, and be A-okay. That's right. Not how that would work. And then he also gave us some awesome weapons, or some better late game weapons, and I think that made the game immediately more fun for me. I think, yeah, if we had the zip line and we had some of those awesome, more resilient blades early in the game, I think the game would be far more enjoyable than it was from a slog and a progression standpoint.
Well, that's the weird balance that they have to reach, right? Which is make it a progression, make you feel like you go from underpowered to powerful over the course of the role-playing like accumulation of skills, but not create a beginning of the game that feels like a slog, as you said. And this one does a little bit like I don't mean to be negative about Dying Light, because I think it has a lot of really great things going for it. I think it looks beautiful. I think the universe, as I said, is really interesting. The storytelling is great. There's enough variety in the environments that makes it fascinating to just sort of explore. I love the fact that it's got this elements of the Fallout games where you're scavenging for things. I love that in games. I love scavenging. I love finding crap and building crap with the crap that I found. I like the idea that if I'm interested in going down that in looking in that corner, I will be rewarded. It may be a stupid little rinky-dink reward that's just a piece of, you know, mishigas that I can build into something else, but at least it's something. It rewarded me for exploration. And this game does that really well. It creates this interesting sense of just a world full of things, which I really like. I just don't enjoy, you know, I'm sort of over zombies anyway, and I don't enjoy the feeling of oppression from zombies. I much prefer it feeling more like a playground. And maybe in that end game, when you are overpowered, it will feel like a playground, but there's so much playing that I've done where I don't feel that way, where I do feel scared, and it's just not what I enjoy as much. I think they do it very well, and they clearly want to create that sense. So if you're into that, you'll probably dig it. I just would rather be having fun than being petrified and running for my life.
And to reinforce what you're saying, being petrified isn't fun. You're not saying that it can't be fun. You want to be having your style of fun, not this other
thing. I think there's plenty of people that are going to dig that feeling of being scared and just narrowly escaping the 30 zombies that are over that next rise by leaping and jumping on their head and jumping up to a telephone pole. I think that's cool, theoretically. I think that if I was doing that, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's what I love about Infamous, right? Or Crackdown. But when I'm doing that in third person, I just feel much more in control of my character. What did you think of their implementation of co-op? Because we played co-op, and I think it's a really interesting, unique take on it. I love the fact this is the kind of game you want to be able to play in co-op for sure. And Dead Island is another one that excelled in co-op, was a much more fun game in co-op than it was single player. But they also add in these weird challenges that pop up constantly where you can, and it'll offer up a challenge just in the course of playing a single player objective when you have a co-op player with you. So if you need to get to a certain place on the map, it'll say, hey, do you guys want to race there? See who gets there first. Or, hey, there's a bunch of zombies outside the door. Do you want to see who can kill the most of them? It's interesting, but it felt a little bit like a speed bump at times. What was your feeling on that?
Yeah, well, so they're totally opt-in. We played on PlayStation 4, and to do it, you hold down the touchpad the touchpad on the controller. And so the only annoyance is having that thing pop up in your screen. What I think is weird is that if I'm like, yeah, let's race there, and I push it, it then sends a notification to you that I've opted in. But until you opt in, I'm just frozen, sitting there waiting for you to opt in. And it's not super long, maybe 5 seconds or whatever it is. But I think that is a speed bump for sure. And so the other part of the game then is, it's cool, I guess, because it is an option. But it is weird to include, because it does, again, change the style of game, I feel like, where you get this opt-in thing and now we're racing. And is that what the game's supposed to be? Or am I supposed to be taking my time and having fun in this deep crafted world and finding loot? And I guess you can do both. But again, this game to me feels like a bunch of disconnected ideas that none of them alone rise above the others to make it super fun. I think it's a great game to come out in this time of year, or, you know, just before all the craziness of February and March starts. If you're looking for something to play, I think you can have a lot of fun with it. But I feel like first-person games are entering the territory now where driving games have struggled for a while, and I think, Jeff, you call it the seat of your pants feel, like even in cockpit view of a first-person game, it's not the same as actually driving in the car where you can tell, oh, crap, I'm going too fast for this turn. And these run-around first-person games in Dying Light doesn't have a HUD or a mini-map, or, I mean, it has a map you can pull up but not a radar, so you don't know if a zombie's behind you. In real life, in Dying Light, I was playing with headphones. It seems to have great sound direction and sound design. But in real life, I can hear and locate things better with my ears. And I also am more spatially aware of than just what, you know, what a first-person screen can portray. I have my peripheral vision, my head moving back and forth. I can peek behind me quickly without getting motion sick the way a first-person game often feels. And I feel like everybody still loves the idea of actually being able to go do parkour, but conveying that in a video game is still difficult because first-person perspective is not real life through my eyeballs.
Well, interestingly, evidently this game is one of the few real AAA titles to support Oculus, and I was reading about that. I found myself wishing I could be in an Oculus just playing it a little bit. Evidently, it's not... they didn't go very far in support of the Oculus. They sort of just threw it in there, and they didn't optimize the game for that. So there's a lot of, from what I read, there's a lot of, like when the game takes over your view during the story elements, it's a lot of like, oh, I'm walking, oh, barf. Oh my God, barf. It's like, what? Why am I moving this way? It would be, I think this is the kind of game that I want to be inside the world rather than looking at it on a flat surface because of all those things you just mentioned. Anyway, really interesting game. I'd love to hear what more people have to say about it. What else is on your playlist, Christian?
So I need more consoles to come out with more things to put on or in front of my TV. Because congratulations, Nintendo, you did it. You did it, you dang dirty apes. You got me. I set up my motion sensor, whatever that thing is called. So now in front of my TV, I have my Kinect, my PlayStation camera, and my Wii Motion thingy plugged into my Wii U. Metroid Prime Trilogy is available currently, still for good a little stuff. Bit of time, for $10 on the Wii U eShop. I have played all of those games, and I love all those games. They are some of my favorite games. I could not resist. So I fired up Metroid Prime 1, which is
good game.
Great. It's a GameCube game, and they did, you know, they gave it a little bit of polish when they re-released it as the trilogy for the Wii. It's only motion controlled now, the same way that Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, is that Corruption? The Metroid Prime 3 control scheme is now applied to 1 and 2, so you can't do a controller. But I thought the control scheme was very effective in Metroid Prime 3. Man, the game, the graphics are dated, low res textures, blah, blah, blahs. But the world that Retro builds, playing this game reminded me how much it is one of my favorite games, and I need to just keep it in my top 10 forever because it's amazing. Yeah. And two, man, I want a new one.
Oh. Why hasn't that already happened? Yeah.
I don't know. Did you play all of these, or just did you kind of, people fell out of love and two, I know.
No, I played all of them. The third one was very frustrating in a lot of ways. The enemy design, especially the bosses, were really frustrating. But I finished all three of them. Yeah. The first one is a true masterpiece, in my opinion, for sure.
It really is. It's amazing. And replaying it, it's the same. It's so good.
Let's go to the phones. We don't have Cheapy on with us anymore, so let's get a call. We haven't had a call in a couple of weeks, so I got somebody on the line here from the 816 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hi, Jeff. My name is Austin, and I'm calling from the Kansas City area. And I've been playing a little bit of iDarb and Alien Isolation.
I have heard such good things about iDarb, which is I drew a ball, right?
It drew a red box.
It drew a red box. Yes, that shows you how dumb I am. I couldn't remember that. Tell me about... I want to play this game. I heard it's really, really fun. Tell me why you're playing it, if you're digging it.
Well, I mainly play it because it's got Twitter integration and Twitch integration. So if somebody's watching my stream, like I did this morning, somebody can go into my game and use one of the hash bombs, which are like hashtag boo or hashtag Sephiroth, hashtag Minecraft, and it'll actually affect what's going on in your game.
Crazy. That sounds really, really fun. What about Alien Isolation? You're digging on that game? How far along are you?
I'm about halfway through. I won't spoil anything because it is a fantastic game. But I am to the point where I tried to trap the alien.
Mm-hmm. Never a good plan.
Well, I just got the flamethrower, so that should be fun. I actually used it. So I'm just like, all right, gotta save my fuel. But yeah, I just got to the past the flashback point.
Crazy.
And that is pretty fantastic and awe-inspiring, especially since it's actually connected to Alien, but it's not so connected that it's just overbearing.
Right, yeah, no, very good game. Again, one of those similar to Dying Light where, you know, my particular joy from gaming does not come from feeling like I'm going to be eaten by an alien every 2 seconds. So it's a hard one for me to get really, really into. But man, I want to play iDarb. I've heard such good things about it, and it's evidently free right now on Xbox Live Gold if you're a Gold subscriber. So Christian, both of us should probably pick that up. You're a Gold subscriber, right?
Yeah, I don't know why. And I love hearing people excited about it. It just doesn't do any. I don't know why. Chances of me playing this game are very slim. I'm sorry.
let's take this call from 850 area code. What is your name? Where you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Matthew from Tampa.
Hey, Matthew, and welcome back.
Yeah, I got to, among other things, but I got to play the Codename Steam demo that Nintendo released last week.
Are you digging it?
Yeah, I am. It's very much a cross of XCOM and Valkyria Chronicles and actually really fun. And the demo is surprisingly meaty, about an hour and a half of content.
Christian, is this something you're going to be playing? I feel like you're Mr. 2DS. Downloads.
Yeah, how am I Mr. Nintendo? In what cruel world am I the one that sings Nintendo's praises? I'm jumping on Club Nintendo points is where I'm going to be. spoiler alert, I'm spending all of my Club Nintendo points on games I can play on my 3DS because you can get them cheap. I've got a good amount of points. So that I'm going to be diving into some old classics, some Metroid, GBA, or nice. Game Boy, not even GBA. That's where I'm going with my gaming time. But
play Codename Steam, dude. I guess I could dig out my 3DS, but it feels so old and busted now that it's not new. It doesn't even have new in the name.
So Codename Steam isn't my kind of game, though. You know what I mean? It is your kind of game. It's XCOM.
It is my kind of game, yeah.
It's not my kind of game. Turn-based. It's not Shovel Knight.
Did you not like Valkyria Chronicles?
No.
Yeah, dude, game is so good.
I'm sure it is. It's just not for me. I'm sorry, listeners, that... other people have been giving us gripes. Part of the reason we don't have super engaging conversations sometimes on games is we just like different games. And I try to sit here and sing the praises of Shovel Knight, and you're like, Yawnsville. And then you talk about...
I think that's good. I think it's good to have varied opinions.
Heroes of the Storm, and I'm like, who cares? We overlap only in a dying light.
Well, that's why we have guests on. And I too, have been reading. There's some great feedback in threads on the subreddit. If you guys – I would love more voices involved there. I feel like it's only 3 or 4 different people giving us that feedback. And it is valued, and we're taking it into account. I'd love to know
–
We had a couple of episodes back-to-back with no calls whatsoever. Had some calls this week. I would love to know if people value the calls, like the calls, or if we should just abandon them. We're starting a new year here. We're into the second month of a new year. I'd love to get more feedback on what you value in the show, what kinds of things you want to keep around. One of the things that's not going away, despite Christian's best efforts, is Tabletop Time, which we will get to right after this word from our sponsor, 5-4 Club. 5-4 Club, oh man, recent new addition to our sponsor team. And I couldn't be more excited because they solved this problem that I have, which is I hate going to the store and shopping for clothes. I really genuinely do. Ask my wife. She can't get me to do it. It's so boring to shop for clothes. That's why 5-4 Club is so rad, because 5-4 Club is this cool contemporary apparel brand. They're unique. They're not found in you know, every store, so not everybody's wearing their clothes, but they're cool and stylish. And then this 5-4 Club creates this male shopping service. So basically what happens is you fill out your profile, t-shirt and jeans, dress to impress, or business casual, and then they sign a stylist to you, and they send you a box of clothes, heavily discounted, that is in that style that you prefer. And the clothes are really cool. They're very contemporary and neat. I was telling people last week about how I was just trying on some of my clothes, and my wife came in the room, and she was like, oh my God, you look great. Where did you get those? I was like, this new sponsor of our show. She's like, no, really? Those look awesome. And then I told her that I mentioned that on the show, and she was all tickled because it really happened. I was like, yeah, people didn't believe that it actually happened, but it totally happened. Anyway, I've been wearing the jacket, which is this jacket shirt combo thing. It's not their name for it. That's my name for it. Anyway, I was wearing it all week. People were giving me compliments on it at my play. It's really great. I'm actually wearing – they sent me some pants. I'm wearing the pants right now, which is weird because I don't usually wear pants for the show. But 5-4 Club, just $60 a month, you'll receive $120 or more worth of clothing, which is cool. And we're going to give you a huge discount if you use the promo code DLC20OFF. That's the number 20, so DLC20OFF, after you go to get54.com. DLC20OFF gets you $20 off your first order, so it's only $40 for your first order. Really, really cool. Also, you have your own referral code, so if you refer people, you'll get even more money off, which is awesome. And I have been really tickled this week seeing how many people have sent me tweets telling me that they signed up because we mentioned it. Because this is like the thing that I've been waiting for because I hate shopping. Okay, so now it is time for a tabletop time. Tabletop time. Right now. I haven't done a lot of table topping this week because I have been working so hard. I am doing my play. We opened my play. It's been going well. Crazy. But I did want to talk about a board game that a lot of people in the chat in previous weeks have mentioned, and that is Sentinels of the Multiverse. Sentinels of the Multiverse is a superhero-based board game, card game, really, where you get create a superhero team, have superhero powers. They're all unique to the game. They're not based on any existing licenses, but they're cool. They're clever, great art, really fun characters, cool powers, and rotating different enemies. So the enemy you're fighting in that game is different. It's a co-op game. You can fight against different enemies every time. They have different powers. So the game has a lot of replayability. But the reason I bring it up is because there recently was a Steam version of this game that hit. I think it's very inexpensive. I think it's like $15. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's what it is. And I've been playing that on Steam. And man, the implementation on Steam is great. Very impressed. They kept all the wonderful art. Big splash pages. It's got this comic book aesthetic where you turn a page and it looks like you're turning a comic book page. But the core gameplay stays the same. It teaches you the game really well and effectively, which I think is a very big part of taking a board game and making it digital. I think that is the biggest boon you can give a potential gamer when they're trying your game digitally, is teach them how to play it well. I think Star Realms did a great job with their app in doing that, and I think Sentinels of the Multiverse does that well as well. So again, it's you know, you're compiling these decks of cards that have superpowers. You have your different superheroes, and you're using them to attack or you know, mitigate the damage you're getting from the enemies. And it's great. I highly recommend it. I think they did a really bang up job making it digital. It retains all of the charm of that superhero universe, retains all the charm of doing battle with superpowers and having that fun comic book aesthetic, but eliminates the one of the things about Sentinels, which was how many cards there were, the shuffling, the setting up of everything, which, you know, in a game like that, or even Dominion, or, you know, these games with lots and lots of cards, if you don't have a cool storage solution, if you're pulling things out and organizing every time, it can get to be a bit of a pain. So digital versions, eliminate that stress and make the game easy to pop in, play a couple of rounds, and pop back out, which is why I dig it. Again, that's Sentinels of the Multiverse. Christian, we still have to get our X-Wing game scheduled in. Now that my show is closing this week, next weekend, we should make that happen.
I want to ask you a question about, I don't know if anyone's ever asked you this before. Where do you stand on the digitization of board games? I mean, I think I'm going to try to express your feelings and you tell me how wrong I get. You like it because it gets people more into board games. Potentially it can serve as a gateway drug into actual tabletop gaming. But I feel like in your ideal world, in the world where Kanata, you know, and where Superman is a Russian and Kanata runs the world and Bruce's parents are still alive.
Wait, why does Superman have to be a Russian if I'm running the world?
We're in that bizarre world, not with the one with Bizarro. It's the Red Sun and Bruce's parents are alive.
Fair enough.
And for some weird reason, Marvel doesn't exist in your world. I don't know why my references were only DC references, but that's happened.
That's who you are.
And Disney still bought Star Wars, but they retconned it so that only the prequels are canon.
Why does my universe suck so bad?
Well, it's only a crappy universe. Only a universe that bad would finally realize the only thing that could save them would be Kanata running it. You know what I mean? They needed that bright light of being happy. But in your ideal world, I feel like people would play actual tabletop gaming. As you were waxing nostalgic, agreeing with Ben's article about land gaming, I fear that you think the digitization of board games is the same problem.
Well, I'm not that stringent about it. It's not ideal. It's what the thing I like about board games isn't present in the digital version. But some of the things that I like, I should say the thing I like most isn't present, but some of the things that I like are present. I mean, the pure mechanics of the games are great. And to learn a game, as I said, having a digital version where you can learn the rules, and the best iOS versions or Android versions or even these Steam versions, the best of them communicate the rules of the game effectively, concisely, and clearly in a great tutorial. And that's something that you just can't get out of a box, right? A game can't teach itself to you when it's just a rule book. You have to sort of learn it the hard way. And I think that turns a lot of people off to board gaming, and it's a great way to make the interactivity of the digital version work for the game in communicating its rule set. But you lose that wonderful tactile sense that I think I am so giddy about when it comes to board games. I love the bits and pieces. I love setting things up and moving them about. I love the box. I'm into all that for some reason. And I also love sitting around that table and sharing some chips and salsa while we, you know, try to amass the largest army or
Is there a Z in your salsa? Did you say salsa? It's chowder.
Chowder and salsa. Salsa.
So why not just live in that world and love it, and who cares if other people don't get into it?
Well, I mean, I just, I kind of want to, I don't understand what you mean. I want to expand that universe. I have more of a pool of people to potentially play with, but I will jump into a game of Lahav on my iPad every now and again. I will play Agricola on my iPad. I will play even Ticket to Ride on my iPad. Yeah, sure. If I have some downtime, sure. I'd like to bend my mind toward that strategic gameplay. I like doing that kind of thing. So
instead of a game that's curated to actually take full advantage of the medium in which it's played, and I don't know if XCOM is that, but I don't know. I feel like we're in this world where oftentimes, and this is true going the other way too, where I think XCOM, the board game, which we played. I guess that's maybe the only off the grid we'll do. We were so excited. We had so many more, lined up. Maybe we'll find another outlet that Yuzav and I can still do that. But, you know, taking a video game IP and putting it into a board game, and I get it. I buy Amiibos. I buy Marvel trinkets. I get it. Here's an IP. I buy Lego games. I get it. But instead of playing Ticket to Ride on your iPad, isn't there a better game that's built for the iPad?
Sometimes, yeah. But, you know, sometimes I want to play one of those type of games and there's nobody around and I can just play it by myself. Or sometimes, you know, it's great to be able to play those games on a train. To play Ticket to Ride on an actual train, you know, like if I'm sitting on a bus or a train or something with somebody that wants to play it, and we can't physically set up all those bits and pieces, or it just becomes impractical. Yeah, we can do pass and play. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and those gameplay systems are really fun to dip your toe into, and it's fun to like try a strategy when you don't have to worry about your friends feeling like you're messing up a game of Puerto Rico because you tried a weird strategy.
Well, I think Kent Doggy Dog in the chat has nailed it. He says that I'm trying to call you a boardist, and I am. I'm going to call you, Jeff Cannata, a boardist and a PC elitist, and you should wear those labels proudly and quit trying to come into my console comfy console confines.
I don't understand how I got this PC elitist thing. I'll take boardist and wear that proudly, but I don't understand how that happened. Like, I used to be Mr. Console. It's just cyclical, man. And somehow I saw somebody in the chat say that earlier too, that if you spell Jeff Cannata backwards, it spells PC elitist. And I don't understand how I got that. Like, I dig PC games, yeah, but I don't know.
No, Jeff, do you realize what's happening? We're 5 years away from Superman living in Russia and Batman's parents still being alive, because we are living in a world where I am the guiding light, shining beacon of this show. I am the piece.
You're
Mr.
Nintendo. Rah-rah Nintendo. Yeah.
I did it. My plan to take full control and to crush Jeff Cannata's spirits is finally actualizing.
Well, you basically did the equivalent of duck season, wabbit season, duck season, wabbit season, wabbit season, duck season on me.
Yeah. All in your segment of tabletop time. Congratulations,
man,
me.
How did that happen? All right, let's wrap this puppy up. We'll have a couple of parting gifts coming up for you. I'm sad that Chibi didn't get to stay longer. He was a really fun guest. We have to thank him for being here. Again, that's at Cheapass Gamer?
At CheapyD is his personal, and then the website, yeah, it's Cheapass Gamer, and their podcast is called The CAG Cast.
Right. What do you got going on this week?
I am doing in February, and I think a few listeners say they're coming out. I will be at the North Carolina Comedy Arts Festival over and around Valentine's Day weekend. I'm bringing my show Improv versus Stand Up out there. We're going to do a version of it, and I'm super excited. I'm hosting it. I'm putting it together with Boris Hyken, who hosts our New York show. Sorry, my phone is ringing because I didn't turn it off. And that's going to be awesome. That's over Valentine's weekend in North Carolina. And people have asked what other shows, if they are going to be there, then Maria Bamford is there that weekend. Go see Maria Bamford when she is in North Carolina. It is going to be awesome. And then this Thursday, if you're in LA, I do a sketch show once a month at the Nerdist showroom called Sketch Melt. And it is this Thursday I'll be doing characters and sketch comedy along with some other funny people. What about you? This is the last weekend for your play.
It is. Yeah, we close Love, Sex, and the IRS. I don't know why that one came out first. Love, Sex, and the IRS we've been doing down at Palos Verdes Performing Arts and getting great reviews, I might add. Fun show, lots of laughs. Closes this Sunday. You can check out We Have Concerns over at wehaveconcerns.com. It's the comedy show I do with Anthony Carboni. I think we have a very special first guest ever. We had Justin Robert Young from the illustrious Night Attack show with Brian Brushwood. He came on and was our first guest, so that'll be an interesting change of pace for the show. Check that out next week. Also, the Slash Filmcast will be reviewing. We did American Sniper last week. We'll be reviewing Inherent Vice this week, so check that out. What else was I going to bring up? There was something else I had to plug, but I can't remember what it is. If anybody has a competitive ranked Heroes of the Storm team and they are interested in having a new member, I think I want to dip my toe in playing ranked and being competitive and trying to get better. So at Jeff Cannata is where you tell me about that. And also, again, we're looking for feedback on the show for this year. So, constructive criticism is great, or things you like. Hey, a novel idea. Tell us the things that you really like. That would be fun, too, instead of just things you don't. Got to thank GPD for being here. Got to thank our callers that called in this episode. Thank you for that. I have to thank Hattie and the folks over at DLC, at 5x5 for producing the show. And we dedicate this episode to Andrew Yoon, who touched all of our lives and made them better just by his presence. I hope you can do the same. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.